There's a dangerous movement in evangelicalism known as the New Apostolic Reformation, and they literally claim that in the past few decades, God has restored apostles and prophets to the church.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
In my presentation, I'll be making the case against modern-day apostles and prophets. As part of the presentation, we'll be talking about who's teaching this ecclesiology, the inherent dangers of it, but also what's at the root of it, and that is a false understanding of the baptism of the Holy Spirit.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case against modern-day prophets and apostles Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. I don't know about you, but it just seems like something we shouldn't have to argue about. The differences between men and women, at least in my experience, are so self-evident, so clear, and really, as a Christian, something that I rejoice in. They say, viva la différence, right? The difference between men and women is a good thing, although in our social context today, in our political context today, it is considered the evil binary. Men and women should be regarded as not only equal, but completely interchangeable in every facet of life. And something is lost when we fail to recognize and even argue against the differences between the two. After all, it is the way we were created, male and female. He created them. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Throughout the next week, we're going to be playing presentations from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. It's our annual conference held each summer here in Collinsville. And we were honored to have Molly Hemingway speak at the 2015 conference. Molly is a Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist. Here's her presentation, making the case for the differences between men and women.
Thank you very much, Todd. I have to just say also, it's such an honor to be here. Issues Etc. has meant so much to me. I was just talking with a friend about how important it is to recatechize and keep up your catechesis throughout your life, and Issues Etc. has been so important to me and my family for that purpose, and it's also just the best show out there. I do a lot of different television shows and radio shows, and the number one thing I always recommend is Issues Etc. Todd is far and away the best radio host around, and I don't just think that, but yeah. And Jeff is an amazing producer, and I mean, I interact with people like who do these jobs all the time, and it's just not even close. So we are very blessed to have such a wonderful show and these men. So I already thought I had an easy task for today because I have to make the case that men and women are different, and I thought it was easy even before Pastor Fiscardi did it, so. But, you know, it's so clear from Scripture, this is something that we don't have a lot of disagreement. We know from the very beginning parts of Scripture that God made man and woman, and we also know just from objective reality that men and women are different. But it's still something that we need to talk about a great deal. Bill Buckley, the founder of National Review, said at the first issue of his magazine that what National Review would be doing would be standing athwart history, yelling stop at a time when no one else would be doing it. And my colleagues at The Federalist and I have jokingly said that the whole purpose of our publication is to stand athwart history saying boys and girls are different while nobody else wants to make that case. And so much of what we cover deals with these topics, and it has worked very well for us. We have tremendous number of readers who are interested, and for us, we're just saying very common sense things, and I'm going to go through some of these things, but I wanted to just follow up on Pastor Fisk's excellent presentation and recommend for people who are interested in some of the topics he raised. Mary Eberstadt wrote a book called How the West Really Lost God. She is Roman Catholic, and boy is she, but, and that's kind of problematic in her books at certain points, but she is a very good writer, and researcher. She's an academic who looks at how the not having children has had a really huge impact on the church, and how the declining religious rates have also had a huge impact on not having children. So it's a reciprocal relationship, and it's a really well thought out, well reasoned argument. Anybody who's a pastor, but also anyone who's just generally interested in the topic, should read that, How the West Really Lost God. And then I also wanted to just quickly talk, since we were talking about the how do you deal with culture when you're not of the world. And my parents are wonderful people, and they raised us very well in this regard, I think, which is that they didn't completely close us off from the culture, but they basically sat with us through everything that we watched, and they would talk, which was actually kind of annoying when you're a kid and you're watching a television show, and they'd be, oh, well, he shouldn't have stolen that candy bar, should have he, Molly? Molly, which commandment did he break right there? Oh, they're not married, are they? You know. To this day, and I mean, this is like decades later, I still hear my mom and dad's voice in my mind every time I'm watching anything. And I think it's just a wonderful gift they gave me to help me receive culture without just passively receiving it and thinking about everything. And so I don't feel threatened when I see something that totally contradicts my beliefs, and instead I can watch it without it destroying my faith or whatnot. And just in the other thing that I always got a kick out of with my parents was, they're both converts to Lutheranism, but they really embraced it. And my mom used to always say that we did things one way and that other people didn't. But the way she put it was, well, here's what we believe, and here's what the Americans believe. So I always felt like we were Russian spies or something, like, oh, the Americans do this. And but it was really helpful to just, I feel like so many of my evangelical friends are really hurting right now because they're suddenly realizing that American culture is hostile to what they believe. And that is not, you know, I think we as Lutherans have always understood we're a little different than other people, and other confessional Protestants, I think, have a pretty good sense that the American culture is hostile. This is a very good, just a good skill to go with. Anyway, so I like to write a lot on this issue of men and women being different, and I wanted to talk just through some issues of feminism, same-sex marriage, and transgender issues. And these are the three topics that we really cover a lot at my publication. And what's really interesting to me is that when people are writing about feminism, so many people in the media are completely clueless about any perspective other than a full-time career woman who's totally focused on job and not on family life and whatnot. And so you see that in so many things that are written, even though the vast majority of women don't actually say they would like to either go for the corner office or not work at all. They say they would like to work, and they also would like a good work-life balance so they can have a happy home life as well. That is not well represented in the media. And if one of the things I thought was really interesting is economists Betsy Stevenson and Justin Wolfers, who are like very popular, even progressive economists, they have looked at how women judge their happiness over time. And so they wrote a very influential paper called The Paradox of Declining Female Happiness. So they looked at how women judge their own happiness over decades. So in the last four decades, we've seen, you know, just phenomenal gains for women in terms of independence, earning, education, cultural attitudes. We're told that widespread access to contraception is the most wonderful thing that ever happened on the planet. So over the last four decades, where these things have become widespread, the way that women judge their own subjective well-being has been steadily declining, not just absolutely, but also relative to men. And it used to be that women judged their happiness far more than men did. They now judge themselves to be less happy than men. And this all at a time of great women's liberation. And what's interesting also is that men who have started to take in American society a more active role in childcare, they actually enjoy that, their forays into childcare. I want to do a quick aside that I think is interesting about how Luther talks about vocation. And he's actually talking about the importance of marriage and how sometimes marriage can be a lot of work, and you might look at it as something that you would not have to do so much work if you weren't married. But the way he talks about it is, if a man is up all night caring for his baby and changing his diaper, he might begrudge his station in life. And I just think it's funny that we think we are so advanced as a people on, now we have men doing more work or whatnot. And here's this guy like 500 years ago talking about diapering his baby and being up all night so that his wife can sleep. And, you know, it's very interesting how we don't have a good lengthy view of these issues of how men and women understand their work. But anyway, both males and females enjoy time spent raising children more than time spent at work. But women enjoy the time spent raising children far more than they enjoy time spent at work. This is just how women talk about these things. And again, working mothers overwhelmingly would prefer part-time work to full-time work. So I like being female, and I have never felt even remotely bad about being female or female member of our species. And I don't know if that's because I've always like steadfastly avoided women's magazines, which I think are just designed to make you feel bad. If it's my relationship with my parents or being Lutheran or just being American, but I've always known that being female is pretty awesome. And the only time it actually occurs to me to even feel remotely bad about it is when feminists start telling me that I'm doing everything wrong. And I thought about this last year when you have all these issues like Saudi Arabia has a ban on women driving. And you have all this information about girl children being targeted for abortion in so many different countries, like a huge gender gap, as they call it, in who's targeted for death, just by virtue of the sex of the child alone. And here in America, we had that big campaign to ban the word bossy, and Facebook's COO, Sheryl Sandberg, was the leader of the campaign, also with Beyonce, and a few other really beautiful, famous, wealthy women, like the most elite women, they all got together and they decided that they didn't like a word, and because they didn't like a word, you couldn't use the word also. And I just think it's funny because like the way to define that is being bossy. but also it's kind of troubling to make this word, you know, we of course do tell both boys and girls when they behave rudely to other children to knock it off. And it might be true that girls are slightly gonna hear bossy more than a boy will, but the words we use for boys, I can't even say right now. I mean, they're bad. And so the idea that this would have any effect on how women perceive themselves is just mind-boggling.
Well, if the ban on bossy campaign wasn't enough, what came afterward is equally ridiculous. We're listening to Molly Hemingway making her case for the differences between men and women from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Do you know the five things you definitely should not hear in an Easter sermon? Better still, would you recognize the five things you absolutely should? Here's a hint. Expect to hear Jesus. Read the April edition of the Lutheran Witness to learn more. Not a subscriber? Go to cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer of 6 issues for only $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/trylutheranwitness.
Did you know that you can listen to our 24/7 talk and music stations using Amazon Echo? All you have to do is say, Alexa, play Lutheran Public Radio.
Lutheran Public Radio.
Or, Alexa, play Lutheran Talk Radio.
Lutheran Talk Radio.
Own thing. You know, there's this recognition that unrighteous mammon.
Lutheran music, Lutheran talk, anytime, day or night, on Amazon Echo.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Duluth, Minnesota would like to invite you to join us Sunday mornings at 9:30. Whether you are visiting our beautiful city or live here, we have liturgical worship that shares Jesus with you. We're easy to find at 20th Avenue East and Superior Street, and also offer Bible classes at 8:25 Sunday mornings, with Sunday school September through May. Check out our website for other Bible study times, visit, or call 218-724-2500.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the differences between men and women, listening to Molly Hemingway of Fox News make her presentation in the 2015 Issues, etc. Making the Case conference. Molly's a Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist. Molly and her husband, Mark, will be speaking at the Winter 2017 Making the Case conference in Houston, Texas. They'll be making the case for religious liberty and making the case for Christian engagement with the media. You can find out more and register for our winter conference November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas, and our summer conference June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Let's get back to Molly Hemingway's 2015 presentation, Making the Case for the Differences Between Men and Women. What came after the Banned Bossy campaign?
They followed up the Banned Bossy campaign with a campaign to ban sorry. And they were talking about how women are always being really apologetic. So if a woman does something that, oh, I'm sorry. And they thought that women were saying it too much. And I get that. Like, sometimes women do apologize too much. I do it myself a bit. But also, I'm kind of happy that I'm an apologizer as opposed to someone who just says my way or the highway. And I think it's so interesting that feminists have such a problem with these traits that we do associate with women a little bit more. So being courteous is now something we need to be ashamed of. And rather than teach more people to be courteous and to think about how their actions impact others, feminists are on this campaign to make women more like men under the name of feminism. And the fact is, we are different. You know, we're different down to our bodies and what we do with our bodies and how that plays an important role in the propagation of the species. And because we have different biology, that actually does relate to how we interact with people differently. We are much better at nurturing. We tend to be, not all of us. Many people might say that I'm not very good at that myself. But we tend to be better at nurturing and forming relationships and working out conflicts interpersonally without resorting to war. No hooting from our war faction over there. And this is a good thing that we are different. This way that we interact with each other is great. Actually, I would like to do something really bad and quote the Pope. He's like a stopped clock, I guess. He's right twice a day. But he had many things that maybe weren't so great this week, but he had a really good passage which got no media attention. Have you ever noticed the Pope only gets media attention when he's talking about how you shouldn't have air conditioning or something? But he said, being parents is based on the diversity of being male and female. As the Bible reminds us, this is the first and most fundamental difference, constitutive of the human being. It is a wealth. Differences are wealth. And I thought that was just a great way to think of it. These are features that we are different. This is not a bug. This doesn't need to be wiped out. It doesn't need to be overcome. And feminism these days basically seems to mean denying our biological reality, denying our biological differences, much less how these differences might affect what we do with our lives. We're just supposed to be like men all the time, doing everything in our power to keep our wombs barren, including chemicals and surgery. I mean, some of the most violent means that we have to be like men for decades at a time so we can be not pregnant, because men aren't pregnant, and we're supposed to view sex the same way men view sex, even though the consequences of sex are quite different for men and women. And we're supposed to ban words so girls can be CEOs, so they can outsource childcare to other women, but lower-class women, of course. Never mind women's actual stated desires to be able to raise their children. And we're supposed to force women into STEM careers. You know, science, what is STEM? Science, technology. engineering, mathematics. I was an econ major, and sometimes that's considered STEM and sometimes not. I was one of like two women in my major, and very few women in the class, although I always thought it was funny that economics is the name for the field comes from the Greek oikonomia, for household management. And but household management is important, and now I'm married and I have children, so I do actual household management, and the pleasure I get from doing that household management just far exceeds anything I learned in economics, including intermediate macro, believe it or not. Sure, running regressions is fun, but... So the old saw is about how feminism... Have you ever heard people say feminism is about the radical notion that women are people? And I think that's funny, because if it were true that that's what feminism were about, we'd all be feminists. And in fact, only 20% of Americans identify as feminist. If you listen to the media, it's like you think that everybody is feminist and feminism has won the day and they won it 30 years ago or whatnot. Very few women identify as feminist, even fewer men identify as feminist. And that's because it's not about the radical notion that women are people too. It's about anything but that. And it's about making women be something they have no interest in becoming, denying reality. And I think it's important to begin our discussion on men and women being different with just a brief look at feminism, because it was really the first project that needed to happen so that we could get into these other projects that we're now being victimized under, including redefinition of marriage and more recently transgender issues, which just seem to be coming with a storm that is unbelievable. Pastor Fisk mentioned some of the after effects of the sexual revolution, and I think it's important that we view, I despise the term social justice, because it always seems to be used as a way, again, of banning air conditioning or some progressive politics. But there's a very real truth to the fact that the sexual revolution has brutalized the weakest among us. And divorce, which happens in our church bodies, in our families, perhaps for some of us, is very bad in general for women, for men, for their children. It's particularly bad for male children. And this is an issue of justice that we need to be very focused on as Christians, to care about people who are least able to handle the after effects of this sexual revolution. Boys are far more likely to be incarcerated if they come from non-intact homes. They're far less likely to graduate from high school, much less college. They are more likely to form relationships that are not marital, or to keep marital relationships. And so the sins of one generation really are visited upon subsequent generations. So the more we can do just personally and in our church bodies is good. Okay, I'm going to assume that most of us understand that marriage is, by definition, the joining of a man and a woman. Okay. I always think it's funny that people say, well, Jesus never talks about this issue. He's actually pretty clear on the topic when he talks. And he talks about marriage and how it should not be dissolved, precisely on the point of what we understand about God making man and woman. He says, have you not heard that God made them male and female? They're joined together, they become one flesh. This should not be broken apart. Just yesterday, I was watching on Twitter. I spend way too much time on Twitter. That's my confession since Pastor... I also spend too much time on Netflix, so maybe the next speaker can confess too much time on Netflix, too much time on Twitter, and something else. I don't know. But just yesterday, there was this Twitter mob. Twitter is that social media tool where people can send brief messages, and it's frequently known for just creating this sort of sense of outrage among people. And there was this guy who is some type of programmer, and a good programmer, and he believes, and we'll get to this in a little bit, that sex is immutable, meaning if you're born male, you cannot change that. If you're born female, you cannot change that. And for that, he faces the loss of his job, because he said something about it. And it reminded me of the situation with Brandon Eich. Do you remember this? He was newly named, this is like a legendary guy in information technology, the real deal, and he had just been named CEO of Mozilla, and some activists decided that he should not be CEO. They couldn't point to anything he'd done in his professional life that was in any way problematic, but he had given $1,000 to the Prop 8 campaign in California, which was a campaign to define marriage as a union of one man, one woman. So when the Twitter mob outrage stuff started, everyone expected him to apologize or something, and instead he didn't. He just declined the opportunity to apologize, and after days of boycotts being threatened and all sorts of horrors, he voluntarily resigned, which I think means he had to resign.
We're listening to Molly Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. When we come back, she's going to tell more of the story of this man and his reaction to the social media barrage after his statements. Stay tuned.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
There's a dangerous movement in evangelicalism known as the New Apostolic Reformation, and they literally claim that in the past few decades, God has restored apostles and prophets to the church.
Chris Roseborough talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
In my presentation, I'll be making the case against modern-day apostles and prophets. As part of the presentation, we'll be talking about who's teaching this ecclesiology, the inherent dangers of it, but also what's at the root of it, and that is a false understanding of the baptism of the Holy Spirit.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case against modern-day prophets and apostles Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/LCMSU.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday, April the 12th, we are hearing Molly Hemingway of Fox News making the case for the differences between men and women from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. When we went to the break, she was telling the story of a programmer who stirred up a social media firestorm. And here she is talking about his reaction to the social media barrage.
When it happened, I thought it was interesting to see the different responses from various parts of the pundit class. So a liberal writer at Slate said it was just it was just a good thing. Libertarian Nick Gillespie said he didn't really care one way or the other about Ike's removal, but it was just like a good reminder that businesses respond to market signals. And even conservatives weren't really rallying behind Ike so much as saying he should have the freedom to say what he wants, even if it's wrong. And that is true, you should have the freedom to say what you want, even if it's wrong, in a free country. But, you know, obviously they're all wrong, because they're wrong, but even more than that, they're not even close to understanding what the problem was. And this is something I think we all need to be very well aware of, because I assume it's coming for all of us, whether or not we're CEOs of large corporations. We understand that people have political differences, and they handle political differences, even deep political differences, all the time, and that what happened was something sort of new that we hadn't seen in a while, and that also the way that Ike handled it I thought was very interesting, because usually people just back down when they're faced with trouble. When it happened, I thought of, I'm really interested in Czech culture, and Václav Havel was the playwright who became president of the Czech Republic, and he died a few years ago, and he was a really great writer and a great man of freedom. He had very idiosyncratic views. He was kind of, you know, like an environmentalist who actually supported civil unions for gays. But he wrote a really good essay that I wish everybody would read called The Power of the Powerless. And I think it's important that we understand just the seriousness of the hostility that we have in our culture and what we're really dealing with. He wrote it under a communist regime in 1978. He spent years in prison for his writings. And it's just a good essay to read for a number of different topics, because it asks everyone to look at how they contribute to totalitarian systems with no exceptions, so how we each contribute to these things. And he specifically wrote it as a message to the West about our own latent tendencies to set aside our moral integrity. And he writes, "The post-totalitarian system demands conformity, uniformity, and discipline." And he liked to refer to to Czechoslovakia as a post-totalitarian system as opposed to a dictatorship, because he thought it was a very complex system of social control. And I like that because it helps me see how we have a system that also demands conformity, uniformity, discipline, and it's not just about marriage law, but it is a lot about whether men and women are different and whether we can talk about that difference. It reminds me, like last week, did you hear the thing about Tim Hunt? He's a knighted, Nobel-winning cancer scientist. He's exactly as dorky as you would think that person might be. But he's known for actually saving people's lives because of discoveries he's made about cancer treatment. And last week he was, I think in Japan or something like that, giving a speech, and he made a joke that kind of landed with a thud. It wasn't really a funny joke, but it wasn't that bad. But he was talking about how really the context was what made it bad. He was speaking on a panel about women in sciences and like improving the number of women in sciences. And he said, "I'll tell you like three things about women. They're all trouble. Like one, they fall in love with you. Two, you fall in love with them. And three, they cry when you criticize them." Yeah. So it kind of went over like, woo, you know. Whatever. But like, to me, the proper response is just to laugh it off. It's not even that big of a deal. Let's say it's all true. It's not really that big of a deal. But even if you don't like it, the proper thing to do is just bust his chops back. He's lost every job he has. I mean, he's out of his university. He's out of the Royal Society of whatever he's, you know, every position he held. This is a guy who's been knighted by the Queen, won a Nobel Prize, and somehow we think that curing people of cancer is less important than this complex system of social control that we're working on. It's just fascinating to me. But marriage law is a big part of that. And just as a reminder of that, and we're going to have a decision coming next week that will redefine marriage. I'm almost positive of it. And when you look at the legal rulings that have led to this, it is also coming for us even as a church body. I used to think it was a red herring when they said, like, you're going to be forced to marry people who are gay. And it's clear that there will be no area of safety for any of us. Now it's clear to me. And when you read some of these rulings that have come forth, even the decision on Prop 8, did you know it identified our church body as a hate group? I mean, it quotes what we believe about what Jesus says. I mean, basically, and Roman Catholics, anybody who has a strong defense of the importance of sex being within marriage was categorized as a hate group. I mean, this is frightening and weird. Like, we're not used to Lutherans being known as anything other than very nice, you know, St. Louis area people. The push to change marriage laws is really just one part of a larger project to change our understanding of the importance of sexual distinctions. And Havel introduced, to talk about this topic though, this post-totalitarian thing. He introduced the manager of a hypothetical fruit and vegetable shop who places in his window, among the onions and the carrots, the slogan, "Workers of the World Unite." I'm sure you've heard that this is sort of like the slogan of the commies. This greengrocer is not actually enthusiastic about the sign's message. And one thing that's important to note is, like, "Workers of the World Unite" is code for this, like, crushing of people and murdering of people. So it sounds nice, "Workers of the World." Yes, we all should work together as workers. That's a very nice slogan. But it's just one of the things that people do. He's just one of many people in his system that put the sign up. It's how everyone does it. You don't even need to really think about it, and nobody thinks about what it means. And it's what you do to get along in life and live in harmony with society. And what I thought was interesting about this is we have all these friends, or I have all these friends, who put up on Facebook the red equal sign, which is for the slogan, like, "Love is love," or "Marriage equality." And it looks so nice. It's great. You don't really have to think about it. And everybody does it. Did you guys see this on your, did you guys have friends who did this? Okay. The subtext of the grocer's sign is, "I do what I must do. I behave in a manner expected of me." It protects him from his supervisors above and from informants below. So Havel's skeptical of this ideology. He says that dictatorships can just use raw power, but the more complex the mechanisms of power become, the larger and more stratified the society they embrace, and the longer they have operated historically, the greater the importance attached to the ideological excuse. So we clearly don't have a dictatorship here. But, I mean, I don't think we do. But, I mean, I understand that the power of the federal government can seem that way. But what's much more alarming is the complex mechanisms of power and in our larger and more stratified society. Think of the media. Think of the way people's, not just the media in terms of the news media, but all of the media that we receive. In any case, individuals need not believe the lies of an ideology so much as behave as though they do, or at least tolerate them in silence or get along with those who work with them. And that's why I think we should think about this too. I know I am not alone probably in just deciding not to fight with people on certain issues or just keeping my mouth shut when people say certain things just because I don't want to have the fight. For by this very fact, individuals confirm the system, fulfill the system, make the system, are the system, Havel says. So what's the system? And why am I talking about this with regard to marriage? Well, you know, again, we've had a media that has, like, been criminally one-sided in how it approaches this topic. And in fact, even I, growing up in our church body, and I always knew what we believed about marriage, but I didn't really understand the arguments for why marriage should be defined as it is legally, until I had a boss actually make me write something up on the fight that was going on over Prop 8 in California. It was fascinating to me because I actually had to dig through the arguments, and it wasn't even close who had better arguments. But the side of the people who believe marriage should be defined as like ontologically the thing that unites men and women, their arguments haven't even been portrayed at all in the media. They're not even mentioned. They're mocked, but they're not. That's the only mention that you get. So I think it is important for us to think about what makes marriage different from other relationships. We understand relationships have value, assuming we're not psychopaths, and we know that marriage is handled differently than other relationships by the government. So why? What is it that makes the government treat marriage differently than other relationships? Is it somehow, like, more vibrant? Is there more emotional connection? What is the thing that makes it different? Why is it singled out throughout all time in history, across every culture, every religious, you know, influence and whatnot, as being distinct from other relationships? So one of the things I think is interesting is if you think of your body as an individual organism, you know, how many of you have a cardiovascular system? Yes. I've expected more hands, but that's okay. It's fine. Or a skeletal system, or a nervous system, an endocrine system. You have all these systems completely operating within your body. You don't need another person or anything. How many of you have a complete reproductive system? No. I see hands raised. If that's true, I mean, you do, but how many of you have a complete reproductive system? How many of you can actually birth a baby on your own without any outside influence of any kind? And if you can, please let us know, because that would make this conference very newsworthy.
We're listening to Molly Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference when we come back with her. Her point about no one being able to reproduce alone, well, there's more to it, and we'll hear what it is. The Issues Etc. book of the month for April is called Man Up, the Quest for Masculinity. It simply assumes that there are differences between men and women, and it actually rejoices in them and establishes them from the biblical text. It's written by regular guest Jeff Hemmer. Man Up, the Quest for Masculinity can be found at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Molly Hemingway on the other side of the break with her point that no one reproduces alone. Stay tuned.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.
Do you long for a church where the gospel of the sinner's free justification is front and center, and yet where a robust sacramental life is confessed and lived? Do you long for a church that rejoices in the sacred scriptures as the sole basis for the church's teaching and proclamation, yet values and listens to the witness of the ancient fathers and councils? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We are what you've been looking for. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find the Church page at issuesetc.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor. And today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armed forces. The LCMS ministry to the armed forces, lcms.org/armed forces. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Before the break, we were listening to Molly Hemingway make a rather obvious point that no one reproduces alone. She's making the case for the differences between men and women from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Back to her point.
None of us can do it on our own. This is the only biological system where we each have only half the system. That is what makes marriage different in the eyes of government. I loved what Pastor Fisk was saying about the three-legged stool, and this is very important. The interest that government has is in what makes this relationship different from others, and why it's about a mated pair, one man and one woman. That's the system. It's not just that the relationship is the union of minds or wills or of important friendships. Those things can happen in other ways, and the government generally doesn't care about it. It's the literal union of bodies. So when I think of, again, of what Jesus says about marriage the two becoming one flesh. It is this literal, you know, when it is just in the act that you become one flesh. And it's just the coordination toward that end. It's not about whether you accomplish that end. And I think it's important. I'm loving hearing all of this talk about the importance of babies and that we should receive children as a blessing. There are, of course, many of us who wish for more children or are unable to have children. And that is not a sin if you don't, you know, if you are open to children and you're not receiving them. This is something that happens, and it's a very sad thing. But it is the union ordered toward that is interesting here. And this is something, so when Brandon Eich didn't step down and didn't recant his views on marriage, it's because he was saying something right. He was saying something correct, and it's something that we should all be so courageous about saying. And I do think that the time is coming when we will actually face persecution in our jobs. I mean, I hate talking about persecution when there are actually people being, you know, shot in a church in South Carolina or being beheaded by ISIS. I mean, that is persecution that prayerfully none of us will ever face. It's also true that we're going to face situations of just being liked less or having to say something true when we wish we could just be silent. But this understanding of the importance of the reproductive system only working together as the two bodies come together is the only way to make sense of marriage law. And once we redefine it to be something else, it's going to be just sheer and utter chaos. There's no defining principle. It is going to be, you know, I thought it was fascinating when you looked at the arguments in the Supreme Court. Did you guys follow this? I'm not sure. The attorney for the government was asked if marriage is redefined, will people and churches and institutions that don't go along with this, will they lose their tax-exempt status? And the guy was like, well, could happen. Yeah, it could happen, and it very well might happen. And I think the ruling is going to come down against marriage, and when it does, I think that we all need to be prepared to protect our institutions as much as possible. It's a lot harder to do good work when your institutions are being regulated against by the government. Okay. I had more on that, but... Oh, one quick thing I do want to also point out. I thought it was interesting about what happened with the religious freedom debate in Indiana. And I think that's really telling for us about how serious the problem is getting, how these laws, which are so well regarded across the political spectrum or had been, are now a way of, you know, now we are told that support for religious freedom means you're a bigot. Things are changing very quickly. So we think of religious freedom as a sort of safe space where we can practice our beliefs and whatnot. I think it's going to be increasingly a less safe space for us, and that it's important to actually argue for the rightness of the positions apart from just the issue of religious freedom. Okay. I mean, I have much more about totalitarianism, but I kind of sense that maybe we can move on to something else, and then we'll have some questions after that. I really did. I had like multiple... Post-communist systems are really interesting, and so are their economies, but that's not the point of the Making the Case conference. So, so what's interesting is we've all sort of, in the last 15 minutes, just had this complete change in how we understand marriage law, so that when I was a kid, this was not even proposed by even the sort of fringiest of society, was not proposing redefining marriage to include... To be something that could be defined as having two men or multiple people beyond two or whatnot. And now it's probably going to happen. And without it even happening yet, now we're already moved on to transgender issues. And this is also part of the same project, and I think it's important that people understand that. And it's a very tricky one. So I think we should all kind of like need to take a step back. Did any person in this room miss the PR blitz involving Bruce Jenner? I highly doubt it. I mean, that was an amazing public relations rollout. It was an amazing propaganda rollout. I think younger people don't understand what a guy this guy was. What did he win, like the gold in the decathlon? What year was that? I don't know, 70s, long time ago. Wheaties box, you know, this guy was like really a big part of the culture, and then he became an even bigger part of the culture as a Kardashian. And isn't there something so perfect about this happening, like arising out of the Kardashian family? No, I mean, really, though, like, there's not like that much difference between believing that the body should be sculpted and molded for objectification reasons and doing what he's doing. But anyway, Bruce Jenner says that he feels as if he is a woman and that he would like to be called Caitlyn, which is such, I think that's so funny. That's like such an 80s kid name. Or that's when it kind of became really popular. But and he gave that interview. Who was the interview with? I didn't actually see it. Diane Sawyer? Yeah, so he did a big interview with Diane Sawyer where he talked about having this confusion about his biological sex and how he would like to be thought of as a woman. And then Vanity Fair pulled out all the stops for this like glitzy photo shoot from the famed celebrity photographer Annie Leibovitz, where Bruce has his hair all grown out and very like ladylike, and he puts on makeup. He had facial reconstruction surgery to give his face features that you might normally associate with a female. He also had some other surgery of the Kardashian style of enhancements. And also interesting is what he did not have surgery on. But I'm not sure if, you know, how much we should talk about that. So he's dressed up in a pinup style, in a very highly sexualized pinup style, like you might see a person like 40 years younger than he is. And it just broke the internet. I mean, people were loving it. It was fascinating to watch. And the media accepted his reality as their own, as they say, his truth. So rather than dealing with the objective reality that Bruce Jenner is a man, they decided to all sort of participate in this delusion. It's actually one of the things that Václav Havel talks about in his Greengrocer essay is a reference to The Emperor Has No Clothes. And I have not seen anything that matches The Emperor Has No Clothes story quite like what we're seeing here. We're all supposed to say, the emperor's clothes are very lovely. The empress's clothes are very lovely. And everybody does it. And like the actual AP style guide, which I'm thankful that we're not bound by at the Federalist, requires you to refer to Bruce Jenner as a female. But these are very complicated issues about one's sense of identity and what we should do about that sense of identity. How do we respect someone and keep a hold on objective reality? And it became an even more interesting story when last week, Rachel Dolezal, who was the leader of the NAACP, said she had been presenting herself as a black woman when by all that we know, that's not true. And we do know a lot. Her parents say she's not black. She was married to a black man. She identified herself as white in the divorce proceedings for that. She sued Howard University, which is in Washington, D.C., where I live, on the grounds that they had racially discriminated against her because she was white. And then she started sort of passing as black, and she, it's like sort of cartoonish, actually. She seemed to spray tan herself, and she had, I will say, amazing hair. Like, that is what I want to know. Her hair looked so good, and it was just really great. Actually, her parents had some biological children and some adopted children, and they were a multiracial family, and so I think she learned a lot about doing hair from having a sister who is black, and I mean, she really did a great job with it. But having said that, there's some family drama. Her parents outed her as lying about her race, and it was really interesting to see the range of reaction. I mean, she lost her job, she stepped down from the end, she voluntarily resigned from her position with the NAACP. She was kicked off a police advisory board where she was assumed to be black, I think. And she's just been doing a lot of media coverage. But it's fascinating to see the different reactions from people. So some people are outraged that she would identify as black. Other people are like, well, you know, if Bruce Jenner can pass as a woman, she can pass as black. But what I think is actually interesting is, you know, clearly she's a woman who you should pray for. She's clearly dealing with issues. she's got problems. And yet she actually doesn't have a weaker case than Jenner. And, you know, liberals are always saying that race is a social construct. And conservatives are always saying it isn't. And I actually think I'm more of the view that it is a social construct. I think it's something basically, if you look at how racial categorization happened, it's a very recent idea. It all comes out of, like, people really kind of enthusiastically embraced it post-Darwin. They were categorizing all these animals, and they thought they could categorize humans too. And it's mostly used as like a political construct to treat other people poorly. You usually categorize people so you can otherize them and then say, oh, and it's okay if we enslave you. I mean, it's a construct. It's not something like, there's not really much difference. Yes, you can see a difference in skin color, some facial features, some hair. It's not really substantively different. Humanity is, I mean, you know, people who are black who have lighter skin than people who are white. You know, there's like a whole fluidity, as they say. And so it actually is largely a construct, even if there is a biological reality that's associated with it. And sex, on the other hand, is not a social construct. It is a biological reality. And it's just a fact of life that you are born male or female. I have two X chromosomes. If you're a dude, you have an X and a Y chromosome. There is no amount of surgery, blood transfusions, clothing, or makeup that can change this reality. It is not a social construct at all. It's not a categorization that people invented to, like, arbitrarily put people into different camps. And on that note, I just want to say, my Latin teacher always said, words have gender, people have sex. It's a very good reminder that you should use sex largely. Like, I think a lot of people, Christian people, think that gender is a nicer way to say sex, but it's really a different meaning. And gender really refers to grammar. And if you want to apply it to, like, the traits that we typically associate with men or women, that's fine. But usually what we're talking about are sex distinctions. Sex. It's not a bad word. You can say it. And it's a really important word to understand what we're talking about.
On this Wednesday afternoon, April the 12th, we're listening to Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, making the case for the differences between men and women from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. She returns to the question of transgenderism right after this.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about the case for the differences between men and women. Molly Hemingway is making that case from the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Before the break, she was talking about the difference between men and women, and she returns now to the question of transgenderism.
Back to the transgenderism issue, though. We're being asked to accept someone's belief, deeply held belief, that they are a different sex than the one they are, and that we're supposed to do this in our language, and that this sort of encompasses like a whole new political campaign as well. And it's largely based on complete junk science. Like I have so many things I want to say here. But so the idea is that gender is fluid, and that you can sort of take a trip up and down that spectrum, and that how you feel on any given day is what your reality is, and that we should all respect that. At the same time, it's part of a system of belief where we've been told that there are no differences between men and women, none in any sense meaningful, and these two things can't really go together. I thought it was absolutely fascinating that when Jenner posed for his Vanity Fair cover, he did it in such a way that he adopted the most stereotypical, cartoonish ideas of what a woman is. It's like bouncy hair and makeup, you know, like this is not what being a woman is about. And anyone who's actually lived life as a woman understands that to view us that way is so offensive and so surface. Okay. But this whole campaign, which we're all being subjected to very quickly, like within weeks we've had in Northern Virginia some forced by the federal government to adopt some transgender policies that nobody has even had a chance really to think through at our schools, which is why I send my children to Emmanuel Lutheran School in Alexandria, Virginia, where we have none of this silliness. But yes, actually that's, if you can do that, do that. But it's absolute madness. And I think that we do need to feel for people who suffer confusion. This is a widespread issue. I recently met with some people who work on this topic in a professional medical capacity, and it's a very complicated topic. It's there are different ways of experiencing transsexuality or transgenderism, and there's a huge difference between what adults, the adult onset of this and childhood onset. For adults, it is frequently dealing with a sexual fetish, a belief that you will be more attractive to the sex that you wish to be attractive to if you were to go through these changes. For children, it's sort of a much simpler and less sexual confusion. It's usually tied to fear or hope. So if a child sees that her mother is having a real rough go of things because her dad left her and life is hard or something, she might think, gosh, kind of wish I were a dude instead of facing this growing up. Or if a boy doesn't feel like, he thinks that all the other boys are really into roughhousing and beating each other up and he just doesn't feel like doing that, he might think, well, the girls don't have to do that. So it's a sort of an easier thing to work on, although it does require family therapy. And there's a shocking statistic about 70 to 80% of children who express confusion about their gender grow out of it without any intervention of a medical kind. And the idea that, you know, the New York Times last week was saying that we should start mutilating kids and putting them on hormone treatment if they are children who express confusion. I mean, it's monstrous. This one doctor I talked to compared it to the frontal lobotomy craze that the country went through for a while, where they came up with this, like, really great idea for how to help families that had difficult members dealing with mental illness. You just give them a frontal lobotomy and all of a sudden Nancy's not causing you any trouble. And it totally worked, except it was monstrous. I mean, it was absolutely inhumane. And once actual studies were done about the actual effect it had on these people who were suffering, you know, fairly typical mental illness, the entire profession rejected it. That's what we're seeing now with mutilation of children. And I mean, Oregon allows children as young as 15 to do it without parental approval. This is monstrous. I mean, it's like out of a bad science fiction novel, and yet it's being encouraged by the government. Anyway, it's important to be sympathetic about people who are dealing with these issues while not trading our adherence to reality and whatnot. So the agenda, I don't really care that much about Bruce Jenner. I understand he's going through some stuff. He's letting us all know that. But the actual agenda, like, I don't know him personally, so I don't feel like I can speak to him terribly well, but the agenda is a power grab that depends on redefining reality for each of us and then sowing sort of dissent through people. Once the voices of dissent are silenced, as we've seen how voices of dissent get silenced, I think it's going to get worse in terms of encroachment of government. This is a war on reality. This is why I do try to use, if someone tells me that they have, that they're trans and they would like to be referred to as a different sex and a different name, I will generally try to call people by whatever name they ask to be called, but I refuse to do the pronoun thing because I don't want to like encourage someone in an altered sense of reality and not in hyped cases, and it's an assault on all of our identity. Propaganda always starts subtly, and it always attempts to appeal to your good sense, your goodwill. We all want to be nice. We all want to be liked. We certainly don't want to lose jobs and whatnot. And once propaganda becomes really obvious, it means that it's too late to fight it, and the masks start coming off. So these issues that we're just starting to deal with, like having trans teachers and how you're supposed to, how your kids in kindergarten are supposed to talk to their trans teacher or whatnot, or having gender-neutral bathrooms, just the tip of the iceberg. It's carefully orchestrated public theater, and I think we all need to be very aware of it so that we can handle it. What I worry about with this, I actually, and I'll close with this, I have no idea how much time we have. but we can have questions after I'll mention this one thing. Oh, great. Okay, so there's this, I'm being so ecumenical today, I'm going to mention a Baptist. We had the Pope, and now Baptist. Russell Moore is this great, who's been on Issues, Etc. a bunch, this great theologian in the Baptist Church, and he said that in his last class at seminary, he had some ethics in pastoral ethics class, and he asked his students to, you know, take up the following situation, which is a woman who's a member of the church comes to you and says she has a confession to make, and she's a single mother with a daughter, and she tells you that 20 years ago she had a sex change. She is actually a he. The daughter doesn't know. She's come to believe that there's a problem here. So your preaching is good, apparently, to get you to that point. And what do you do? And I think this is an issue that we will face more and more in our churches and also in just our interpersonal relations. How do we handle this, you know, being both truthful and speaking in love? So the idea that, you know, it's a simple job to say that men and women are different, yeah, it's obvious. It's obvious. And the truth will bear out even if we're all dead in sort of, you know, dystopic post-totalitarian nightmare. The truth will eventually bear out, but in the meantime, we have a lot that we have to deal with in terms of a culture that's very much hurting, that has been absolutely terrorized by this sexual revolution and so many of the false assumptions that underlie feminism and everything that it has brought forth.
Molly Hemingway.
That's Fox News' Molly Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll hear Dr. Paul Meyer's 2015 presentation making the case for the historicity of the New Testament. The differences between men and women are a gift. From the very beginning, how he created us, male and female, he intended the female to be a gift to the male and vice versa, and he still intends this. If we deny this difference, we deny the great gift that God has given us in our very creation. It's never a good idea to try and thwart creation, much less the Creator. And it is the same male and female that he has redeemed by the blood of Jesus Christ, a man, by the way. And think about what happens if we eliminate the difference between male and female to the humanity and to the man, Jesus Christ. It's a dangerous path we walk when we try to thwart our Creator's will. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.